Bobby and Bill Ryan, and it's Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio. Good morning, I guess it is.
Depending on where you are on this spinning planet, this is evening here in Europe, and I have literally walked in through the door with a cup of coffee in my hand, and my bag still kind of dropped in the hallway, and I've got quite a bit of interesting news to share, or I don't know if you'd call it news, but quite a lot of things have been happening this weekend that some people might like to hear about, including yourself, because we haven't spoken since the last radio show, I think. I can't remember. Time's going too quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Bill, why don't you share with us what went on when you went to Poland, which sounded fascinating, and unfortunately I was not able to attend. They didn't have the finances to fly me over, so I was here doing some other things, but why don't you tell them what you experienced over there?
I surely will. And first of all, for people who have tuned into the show today not sure what's going to happen, that's because we weren't sure what's going to happen, and I think we put TBA, which means to be announced, on our website, due to the guest. We might be talking to someone a little later, possibly, but as we usually do, we're surfing right on the cusp of this wave. But I can be a guest for a few minutes here, because I went off to Poland for the weekend, where we were both invited for an event there. It was a little bit different from a sort of mainline conference hall type auditorium conference, which I'll go to in a minute. And as you just said, you weren't able to go because the Polish organizers didn't have the finances to take you over from the US especially. But the first thing I want to say, actually, you know, and this is so genuine, every time I mentioned your name, there was a round of applause. It was almost like, it's exactly the kind of thing that you would have loved. You would have loved to hear that, and I wish I had it recorded. I think we're going to be able to get all this on video from somebody in the end. But each time I mention you, you are loved over there. You are absolutely loved. And so I came over there almost like as an apologist for your absence. It was really quite funny. And in the end, when I announced that you were coming to Europe, but next month, because we're going to be speaking in Brussels on the 10th of October, and that you may well end up staying, because you don't really know what your plans are going to be, and this is something we can talk about on the show as well. A lot of people were really enthusiastic about the idea of your coming back to Poland, and one of the things that we've got set up here, and I'm doing this all out of sequence, but I'm just following the flow of the conversation rather than the flow of time, is we have an opportunity to meet Igor Witkowski, who assiduous followers of Camelot will remember as being the inspiration behind Joseph Farrell's research into the Nazi Bell, and before him Nick Cook's research into the Nazi Bell and his excellent book The Hunt for Zero Point. And Igor Witkowski was one of the prime sources of this information. And in the area where we were, which was southern Poland, in a place called Lower Silesia, if I'm pronouncing that right, that's where this... Oh, here comes the music. Oh, okay. We'll have to wait on that cliffhanger for another few minutes, and then we'll be back, and I'll tell you all about what I did and didn't see when I was in Lower Silesia. And the reason why we're talking to each other is because at the moment we've got nobody else to talk to, but that might change, I think, and Kerry and I are trying to fix this up as we speak, and as I mentioned a few minutes ago, this is very much the way we operate. For anyone who's just missed the start of the show, I've literally just walked in through the door, and I've returned from Austria and from Poland, and I was in the middle of describing not only how Kerry is regarded over there like Superwoman and everyone loves you. I mean, I should say they love me too, but they really love you, and they love both of us probably more than either one of us individually. And it really is quite a phenomenon, which I'll go and talk about a little bit later. But the person who invited us over there is a very wonderful man called Janusz Zagórski. And he is a little bit, if I can reference Duncan Rhodes, our friend in Australia, who invited us down to a conference there. He's the editor of the very well-known Nexus magazine. He's a little bit like the Duncan Rhodes of Poland. He organizes everything. He used to be in television. He's in the media. He's widely respected. Everybody likes him. He works himself to bits. He's a superstar. He's a wonderful man. And he just devotes his life to organizing events and getting information out. And he's a very, very lovely guy. And there isn't anyone in Poland who he doesn't know who's doing anything remotely important. And of course, he knows Igor Witkowski, which is what I was saying just before the break. And Igor Witkowski was the guy who first broke the news about the strong possibility that the Nazis may have had extraordinary weaponry and technology that was that never really saw the light of day, because the Americans grabbed it at the end of the Second World War, and what the Americans didn't grab, then the Russians grabbed the rest of it, and it's been sort of written out of history. And Igor Witkowski is a historian, and I didn't meet him personally, but the area that we were in, which was Lower Silesia, is the place where you may have seen those photographs of this thing that some people call the henge structure. It's this sort of thing that looks a little bit like a water tower frame. It's a circular arrangement of pillars with a kind of that looks as if its purpose was to hold something massive. And that thing, which I didn't actually see, is very close to where we were. And I was really interested to see this thing. And I was saying to Janusz, look, I'd love to have a look at this thing. And he said, well, actually, there's nothing really to see apart from that thing that you've seen the photographs of. And what's really interesting is what you can't see unless you've got a guide. Because what Igor Witkowski can do is he will take us, when we go there, to the underground facilities that the Nazis used in their experimentation, which were extensive, and the public do not have access to these. But because he is a historian and researcher, he does have access, and he can supply us with access. And there are only a couple of people, as best I know, who have been there to see him. Possibly a third if we include Joseph Farrell, but I don't know if Joe Farrell has actually been there. That's Nick Cook and also a documentary crew from the Discovery Channel that went over there to produce a program on this that I'm told is really worth watching. And so I'm pretty enthusiastic about meeting Igor Witkowski, and you're very much part of that picture. And at the moment, Janusz is, as we speak, he's seeing if he can set this up for the second half of October when we're in Europe. So how does that grab you?
Oh, that would be fabulous. I think that's so interesting. Certainly it seems that the Nazis were experimenting, I believe, with time travel. And I think when all's said and done, the big picture and time travel is really going to be where it's at. So of course, that would be a great piece of the puzzle for us.
It seems that they were certainly doing something. I would say personally that it's a bit of a stretch to say they're experimenting with time travel, but what they were doing was they were experimenting to better understand the physics that now, in its, you know, fourth or fifth or tenth generation, somewhere deep underground in America, probably is being used for time travel. And what they were doing was they were implementing the practicalities which are underpinned by torsion physics, that of course David Wilcock has spoken a lot about, so has Joe Farrell, so has Richard Hoagland. And the Russians, who are very, very smart, were onto this before the Americans were, as far as I can gather. And of course, this is something that overlaps into some of the information that we got from Pete Peterson. But we got so much information from Pete, I can't actually remember anymore what's on the video and what's off record or what was on record.
I know. This is what's very dangerous. Yes, absolutely. But continue with your story.
Okay. So anyway.
On that rabbit hole.
That was just referencing the Igor Witkowski interview, which I'm really looking forward to because I'm just really fascinated in stuff like that. But Poland is a place where there are a lot of very wonderful people. And I'd never been there. This is my first visit. And my only knowledge about them actually came from the mountaineering world. Some of the listeners may know that for many years I was a mountaineer. I was a fairly serious mountaineer. I went to the Himalayas a few times, climbed all over the world and stuff. And I was always bumping into Polish mountaineers. And the Polish mountaineers have a worldwide reputation for being tougher than tough. They never give up. They never stop. They never know when to quit. They keep on smiling. They suffer all kinds of hardships, and they don't even think twice about it. They were the first people to climb Everest in winter, that at the time was unheard of and impossible and ridiculous and incredibly challenging. And the Poles just did it because it was there to do. And the Poles are just very, very tough people. And they're very strong people. And this is very much the vibe that I got from them. And just to bring us back to the present here where I was, I didn't really know what it was that I was going to. I just knew that I was going to a conference of some kind. And what this was an open-air event. There were about 500 or 600 people there, and Janusz Zagorski, the organizer, was a real model for what you can do if you plant a seed. And there's this wonderful aphorism that I really like, which is saying that the best time to plant an oak tree is 200 years ago. The second best time is now. And I love that saying because it's just another way of saying, you know what, you just have to start sometime. And even though the thing that you got is going to be small, that shouldn't put you off from doing it. And Janusz started this particular annual conference in 2002, and there were 7 people. And then in 2003, there were 20 people. But that graph continued to climb exponentially or logarithmically or something. And now he's got 600, and it's just a real event. There were people traveling from all over Poland to come there, and there were all kinds of speakers, and it was open air, and they all meditated and made sure it didn't rain, and it didn't rain at all, and the full moon was there. And there was some music. And I spoke for about an hour and 40 minutes, and there's a guy who came up to me just as soon as I arrived, because my plane was late and I lost my bags and all this kind of stuff, and so I arrived there pretty much like I've arrived just here. I arrived there and I was almost due to speak immediately, and I had no idea what was going on. And this guy came up to me, this little guy, really strong energy, very bright eyes, very friendly, and he came up to me and he said, I would like to translate for you. And interestingly enough, Janusz had already lined up several translators, or several potential translators, none of whom I'd ever met. They were all sort of untested. And this guy, who Janusz didn't know, had driven from Warsaw, which was 6 hours on fairly bad roads, had had a fight with his wife because his wife didn't want him to come. And he said, I have to meet Bill Ryan. I have to meet Bill Ryan. And he came, and he grabbed the microphone. No, he didn't grab the microphone. I mean, he was a lovely man. He took the microphone. He was something like a 28-year-old, this is just a guess, he was in his 20s. He was a school teacher. And he was just one of the best translators I've ever had. He was perfect. And he just said, I knew I was here for a reason, and he just grabbed the microphone. And I talked for an hour and 40 minutes, and after my time was up, then I went back from where the floodlights were, sort of in this big open field, and I went and stood under a tree to answer one or two questions. And I stood under that tree with a crowd of 30 people for another 2¾ hours with this guy continuing to translate. And they wouldn't stop, just like the mountaineers. They wouldn't stop asking questions, and the questions they asked were good, and they were very smart. But, of course, because all the Project Camelot material hasn't all been translated yet, they were so hungry for information. But they were very intelligent, but they didn't have all the information, and they were absorbing it as like dry sponges. It was a really remarkable experience. And then I had a very similar experience the following day, because that was the Saturday, and then on the Sunday, I had a four-hour workshop. And I know you've had this kind of experience. Janusz had programmed me for 4 hours, and I looked at this thing on a piece of paper thinking, my God, how can I talk for 4 hours? Now, of course, it's easy. because we have so much material, yeah. And they have so many questions. And these people, you know, they were crowding in the door, and they were trying to get more than people in the room that the room would fit, and they wouldn't go away, and they wouldn't stop, and they were asking all these questions. And they're very smart, very aware people. And they all wanted to know when you would be coming over here. And we've got quite a following. And what Janusz says that he wants to do, and I'm really game for this, is in March, and this is separate from from our prospective visit to Poland next month when we meet Witkowski. In March, or possibly earlier than that, he wants to hire a big auditorium, do the whole thing really professionally, and hold a weekend event back-to-back with David Icke. And David Icke would do one day, you and I would do another day, and he reckons he can get 500 or 600 people there at the drop of a hat. And I'm going to help him organize that, and I think that would be a wonderful event. Because...
That sounds great.
The people there have heard of David Icke. They've heard of us, but they haven't really heard of anybody else, which is really quite interesting. So there are people who are hungry for information, because not a lot of stuff out there on the internet, on YouTube, gets translated into Polish. You know, it gets translated into German and French and Spanish and Italian and Portuguese, but not Polish. And so... these people are really, really wonderful people, and I would like to go there and really do my best for them. And then today, I arrived back in Vienna. We drove, I should say. I traveled from Switzerland to Austria, and then drove from Austria through the Czech Republic to Poland, and then all the way back again. Interestingly enough, here's a little... a tidbit of information. I might as well have left my passport at home. All the borders were just completely wide open, including the borders at the airport. I never had to show my passport going into Austria, coming back into Switzerland, crossing into the Czech Republic, crossing into Poland, crossing back again. Nobody cares. There's nobody there. Everything was closed. They're just letting people in Europe
travel around very freely. Yeah, absolutely. I always say that that may be a good thing, and it also may be indicative of just how pervasive the surveillance has become.
It's like that joke by the graffiti artist. I think it was in Australia. There's this big graffito on the back on the side of a big building that said, "Big Brother is no longer watching you. He's already got all the information he needs."
Well, the other thing is if you want to talk to the powers that be, just talk to the wall.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm paraphrasing, but it's something like that.
That's something that Stephen Greer was told. I think he was literally told that back in the mid-1990s, I think. There's another version of the phone of that same story when apparently he asked... if I need to talk to you, how am I meant to do that? And he was just told to pick up the phone, and he said, yes, but what number do I dial? He said, look, you don't dial a number, just pick up the phone and start talking. It's very, very funny. These are the kind of things that should be written into any movie. It's just a whole
Yeah, absolutely. And I have gotten a statement like that a similar anecdote from Robert Salas, who is a very interesting witness about the UFOs over the missile installations here in America. And I did a rough interview with him prior to Camelot, and what his wife told me is that they did exactly that. She picked up the phone at one point, and there was all kinds of, you know, goings on the other side of the phone, basically. And it just became very clear that they were being, you know, monitored. So
we should actually try that sometime, you know. and see what happens, you know.
It's not happened to us, not in quite that way, but anyway.
Okay, so look, I'm only halfway through my story here, because I wound up in Vienna, and I was in Vienna all day today, and the other person of some note now, who's escalated rapidly to becoming a much discussed public figure, is Jane Burgermeister. And so I got in touch with Jane and said, look, I'm in Vienna just for the day. Are you able to meet and talk? And she was. She was able to shift her schedule. Her father has just gone into hospital, and she was a bit concerned about that. But she was able to make it at quite short notice. And I think that I have got a very, very good little video interview with Jane Burgermeister. And I have to say, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later, I was very favorably impressed with somebody who is feisty, who's intelligent, and who is not the person whose photograph has been circulated around on the internet. It's a completely different person. This person
I think that statement is going to be misunderstood. What you mean is that there's a photograph or something of the person who is Jane Burgermeister, is the same Jane Burgermeister that everyone knows about, but you're saying that she doesn't look like the photograph. Is that correct?
No. I'm saying they got the wrong photograph. They got the wrong person when they were trying to find out who she was. You see, because
the answer is yes, they have the wrong photograph. Is what you're
they
saying.
Have the wrong they have the wrong photograph of the wrong person. This is a different person. And what's interesting here, and this really struck me when I was on the plane back here just now, is that here comes the music. Wait on this cliffhanger for what struck me on the plane. Okay, wait for 3 minutes, and that will reveal all. Last time, the reason why we're talking to each other is because I don't think yet we've got anyone to talk to, but maybe that's something that Kerry can answer. It makes it sound rather boring, actually, but I tell you it's not, because I've just come back from Poland and from Vienna, where I had a most interesting meeting today with Jane Burgermeister. But just before we dive into that again, Kerry, do we have a guest later? Do we have any idea? Do we know what's going on here?
Actually, we had a sort of a scheduling mix-up today, so the person that we were hoping to have on is not available, and then we're also, I guess, we've invited a couple of other sort of secret guests, but those people have not shown up either. So it's basically for us to sort of make do with this time that we have. And as it happens, there is plenty to talk about. So why don't you go on, and if one of these guests shows up in the background, I will bring them on.
Okay, all right. So anything can happen in in this strange world. All right. So I was talking about Jane Burgermeister, and I was very, very impressed with Jane. For anyone who is listening and who has any doubts, I want to tell you that this person is feisty, very brave, very determined, supported very much by her Christian faith, because I wanted to know why it was that she had, you know, decided to pick up this torch and was running with it as fast and far as she could, very, very much unsupported. And she really impressed the heck out of me, actually. She's 100% genuine. She is not convinced that some people out there are 100% genuine, but to her great credit, in the interview that we did, she didn't even want to talk about the psychological operation that's been going on the internet about all of this. Whatever it is, there's something happening. And of course, one of the issues with psyops on the internet is that while we get our personal buttons pushed by feeling outraged because somebody suddenly said something nasty about us or about, you know, somebody or whatever, it's so easy to go down that particular distraction of a rabbit hole and never come out, because then you spend all your time infighting and throwing mud and defending yourselves and trying to prove that what somebody said isn't true and trying to prove that, you know, that trying to find out who it is who's really said these things and so on and so forth. And Jane quite rightly said, you know what, I don't even want to use the opportunity of this interview to talk about any of that stuff at all. I just want to alert people to what's going on, and I want to give some information, and I want to really blow the whistle, as it were, about what kind of danger I think we're all in, and all the rest of it is just a big distraction. And I thought, she is so right, you know, and there are many, many people who are old hands in this, in the alternative media business, so to speak, including ufology, which she doesn't know anything about whatsoever, absolutely knows completely nothing. And I was able to say to her, well, people have been fighting with each other ever since the field started to be infiltrated back in the 1950s, you know, in the days of NICAP and Donald Kehoe and all of this kind of stuff. They've been infiltrating people very, very cleverly that cause problems in the field, and they don't even have to try and paint someone as being an out-and-out liar or an out-and-out fraud. All that happens nowadays is that seeds of doubt are sown. That's all that's needed, is because there's such an information overload. If somebody thinks, well, you know, I read something about that person, I'm not even quite sure what I read now because I can't quite remember, but I seem to remember that somebody said that they weren't maybe, you know, totally reliable. And then whatever it was that that person saying then gets colored by that doubtful view that isn't even based on any facts. And then they move on to the next website, because what people are looking for is clear, clean information, or information which they feel is clear and clean. And if they feel that it's not, then it kind of doesn't stick. I don't know if I've explained that very well, but do you know what I mean?
Of course I do. Yeah, and I would say that this is all part of the whole tactic of the powers that be, to pit one side against the other. And as Pete says, to end up with, what it does to the human mind is to confuse. And once there's confusion and there's complete contradiction, the mind, unless it's fairly sophisticated, doesn't know how to resolve contradictions. And therefore, the person sort of gets to a place where they don't want to go any further into the subject matter. They just sort of stop and move on to something else. And so it actually is very useful to them to use these tactics.
That's very clearly put. That's much more clear than I had expressed it myself, actually. It's like they create a cognitive dissonance, which then kind of sticks like a standing wave, so that if Joe Researcher is trying to do good work and then someone else says that Joe Researcher is an agent, then a member of the public who's trying to find out what's going on gets stuck between these two polarized views. They get stuck in the doubt. They're not able to resolve the problem because they don't have the information or the resources to do that. And then they just move on to the next thing because it sort of cancels itself out in, like, you've got information for this guy, information against this guy, and then in terms like an accounting exercise, then they don't feel that they know what to believe, and so they move on looking for something that they feel they can be certain of because there's so much confusion. It's very, very interesting, but in itself, that's a rabbit hole that we're going down right now. But I just wanted to commend Jane Burgermeister because she didn't even want to go there. She just wanted to talk about what she felt. I mean, her words on the interview that I want to publish in the next 2 or 3 days, if I possibly can, was that every minute counts here, you know, or every day counts. We're really up against time, and there are a lot of opportunities which she feels have been lost because of the infighting in the anti-vaccine community. And actually, I couldn't agree with her more, and I'm not going to name any names at all because it's not our place to do that, and I don't want to do that. But certainly, there do seem to be some people there who are trying to discredit her, and she is absolutely innocent of all of those charges. I'm completely sure of it. Very, very interesting stuff. So I just wanted to report that. And of course, if we go to Poland, the way to get to Poland from Brussels, I believe, is to go through Vienna. As far as I can gather, I need to take another look at my map of Europe, but there's the opportunity for you also to meet her next month, talk to her yourself on or off record, which I think you'd be really interested to do, and also to meet another guy who lives in Vienna who we met when we were in Barcelona, which is Klaus Doner. And would you like to tell people about Klaus? Because I would like him to be a Camelot witness.
Oh, I'd love him to. He's really a fascinating man. He did a presentation in Barcelona, and I guess you would say, in a sense, he's kind of like a nuts and bolts researcher in terms of antiquities and in terms of finding relics and evidence that's tangible. That's really what he works with. And along those lines, he's worked with the various crystal skulls, and he I guess he's in contact with an expert who was able to determine the age of the various crystal skulls that are out there. And they've done incredible work in this area and determined, actually, that the crystal skull that we did a short video of in Australia, the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull, is actually, it's not exactly a fake. In other words, it's a real crystal skull, but it is actually created in the very early 1900s, and it is not what they think it is, which is absolutely fascinating. And we'd love to do a drill down interview with him on just that subject, actually.
Yeah. What was interesting about that, without going too far down that rabbit hole, is that, of course, it's a staggeringly wonderful, beautiful work of art, but it wasn't appreciated by some people in other places other than Vienna, which is where he is, and where there are some very, very expert people who work with crystals. They make all kinds of crystal objects and crystal glasses and crystal vases and crystal ornaments. And what he says is that the researchers, who in all good faith have commented about the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull, don't realize what it is possible to do, what it is possible to make. And this didn't have to be made by aliens, didn't have to be made by Atlanteans or whatever. It actually was very probably made in Austria about 150 years ago. And now, I'm not qualified in any sense to offer a personal opinion on that, but to hear Klaus talking about this is really very, very interesting, and something I think that you and I both share is an appreciation for people to say, hey, wait a minute, the emperor has no clothes here. There's some, there's a different angle on this which we need to consider, which no one else is talking about, and then to follow that lead and see where it goes and see how intelligent it is. And so to talk with somebody who really is saying with some degree of persuasive authority that is really quite likely that this artifact is relatively modern, it's a very, very interesting conversation to have. But of course there are many other things which he's in a position to talk about and report on as well, because he collects artifacts and he's a very, very lovely man. And because my visit to Vienna was such a flying visit, I didn't have the opportunity to talk with him at all. Just before I hand the baton over to you, which will probably happen after this coming break, which is approaching in maybe 3 or 4 minutes, I want to talk about another guy who I met in Poland. And this is now when did this happen? This happened yesterday. A Polish engineer, and the Polish are very very smart, very determined people, as I was trying to describe earlier. And this is a Polish inventor. And we were taken by Janusz Zagorski to meet him. He didn't speak a word of English. And we had a translator there, and he showed us his workshop. And his workshop really was something else. It was like the kind of workshop that I imagined Pete Peterson's workshop would be, which we never got a chance to see, of course, because we never visited Pete at his home. And this workshop was really quite something. There was a lost count of the number of microscopes that were there. There were so many oscilloscopes and meters of different kinds that I couldn't imagine what he would use them all for. And he's just somebody who's a brilliant experimental technician with a deep scientific understanding behind him, which is very much the kind of man that Pete Peterson is, of course. And he just spent his life sort of making things and discovering things and playing with things and seeing what he would do. And there are a couple of things which he showed me, which impressed me. One or two other things which I'll talk to you about off record, which he's working on. He had something which he called, or which the translator called, an electron gun, which bored tiny holes in solid metal, like it sort of shot through the metal, just like a bullet going through a solid and leaving a hole behind it. But these holes were very, very, very tiny, nano holes basically, in the metal. And so there's this big, thick piece of metal, and then you hold it up against your eyes and you can see through it. And this metal becomes semi-transparent because it's got so many nano holes in it. But yet its strength isn't reduced at all. And I thought that was just really neat. And this was just something that he was experimenting with almost out of playfulness, because he had this electron gun and he wanted to know what he could do with it. Something else that he discovered very much as a side effect, and this really did impress me, and I've got some of this stuff with me that I brought back here. Ah, you'll have to wait for 3 minutes to discover what I brought back with me. Okay, we'll be back in a couple of minutes after the break. Debriefing to Kerry here, having returned from Poland and Austria, where I met a whole bunch of interesting people, including Jane Burgermeister, and I was able to record a 50-minute interview with her today. We've just been talking about that, and I was very, very pleased to have captured that. That's a good one. And anyone who's in any doubt at all about Jane Burgermeister's credentials and authenticity will be reassured by this video. And so I was very, very glad to have the opportunity to do her that service. Just before the break, I was talking about what it was that I brought back with me, because we were introduced to a very remarkable Polish inventor in his very remarkable workshop. And this is not just a guy tinkering in his garage. This is a guy who was so brilliant in so many ways that that he was recruited by NASA and then spent a while working with them in Florida, and showed me pictures of him with the space shuttle and all this kind of stuff. But then he came back to Poland because he didn't want to be owned by anyone. He didn't want to be controlled by anyone. He didn't want anyone to have the rights to his inventions, and he wanted to come back and basically work for the Polish people and be completely independent. And I salute him for that. It's not that many people who turn their back on NASA coming from a place like Poland, where the danger is that if you don't speak English, you're not likely to be recognized by the rest of the world. Anyway, just another neat invention that I just wanted to describe. And like many inventions, this was something that apparently he had come across completely by accident. It was a spin-off. It was a side product of something else he was working on. And it's an elastic membrane that he has developed into something that looks like a bandage, like the kind of thing that you put around your finger, you know, a band-aid, in the form of an elastic membrane, which is full of micro holes. And I don't know how he created these micro holes. I don't think this has got anything to do with the electron gun that I was just describing. One of the problems is that the translator wasn't a technical person, so we kept on encountering terms that neither I or the translator properly understood. But it has a double effect. If you put it on an infected wound, the infected wound apparently will heal itself remarkably and often without a scar within 24 hours, whereas in any other, without that treatment, it just continues to fester for days or often for weeks. And this is a very remarkable thing. And I asked him, how did this work? And apparently it works because the only thing that can actually go through the little holes in the plaster, and this is my understanding through a translation, so this is not necessarily technically accurate, and we can get more information on this later, but the only thing that can get out the wound is oxygen, or maybe the air. I'm not quite sure which, but moisture cannot get at the wound at all, because moisture will not pass through this. In other words, water vapor molecules won't pass through this membrane, but oxygen will. And so what happens is the wound oxidizes itself, and any bacteria that are there just die, because they dry out, they get oxidized, and then the body just does its job and it heals itself very, very, very quickly. And then he said that a further byproduct of this, which he discovered, and I wasn't there for long enough to try it at all, you know, is that you can actually put this stuff over your mouth and your nose, and you can breathe underwater like a fish, because it works on the same principle that the water doesn't get through, but the air in the water does. So you can actually use this technology for breathing underwater like a fish, and you don't need tanks and scuba equipment and all this kind of stuff at all. So I'm going to try it in the bathtub later on and I'll report back in the next radio show. I just thought that you might find that was quite neat. But it's a very interesting what inventors stumble on completely by accident.
Absolutely. That's a fabulous invention, actually. And I would think he could make millions, though, doing that.
And he's not interested in making money at all, otherwise he would have stayed working for for NASA or got some big backers in America, and apparently people have tried to, you know, buy his inventions for lots of money, but denying him the rights, and he's not interested. You know, it's very, very, very interesting how somebody with principle. I mean, there are inventors with principle there who refuse to sell out, and maybe he does need a business manager. I have no idea. There are a million questions I wanted to ask him.
Well, I mean, apparently he does. I mean, it's, you know, there's a big leap between, you know, literally having an invention and actually, you know, wanting to make, you know, money to survive and so on and so forth, unless he's fabulously wealthy, in which case he doesn't need money. But if he does need money to survive, like the rest of us, then, you know, he obviously has something that's very wonderful that should get out there, you know. So I guess that's what he needs, is a business manager.
Well, yeah, I think, in fact, over the years he has produced so many gadgets and done so much interesting work for so many people who have seen the value in his inventions, that he lives in a very nice place and he's very well off by Polish standards. He's not rich, but he's completely independent. He's well taken care of. He's got a beautifully equipped workshop. I just found myself thinking, wouldn't it be great to have somebody like him and Pete Peterson get together, and what would they really, you know, what would they talk about, and what might they be able to do together on opposite sides of the world? So that's my bridge over into you telling me what you've been up to. That's the end of my story. And we'll be back at the top of the hour. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. It's all right. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. It's all right.
Your head, and you ask, is this where it is? Then somebody points to you and says, it's his. And you say, what's mine? And somebody else says, well, what is? And you say, oh my God, am I here all alone? But something is happening, and
something is happening. And many people don't know what it is. Some people do, though, however. That's why we have Camelot. So this is Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan, Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio. And we've been listening to Bill talk about his recent trip to Poland. And he was just there with the Poland, I guess you call them Poland ground crew. And he was doing a short conference over the past few days, which was really wonderful and very impromptu, actually. And unfortunately, they couldn't afford to fly me over, but hopefully we're going to remedy that situation in the future, and I'll be able to go over there and see them, and also possibly do something in Warsaw at some point, I understand. So that would be very exciting.
And at this point, I want to ask you what your plans are. And this isn't staged. This is a real live conversation here between the two of us, because we haven't spoken to each other for several days. Lots of people were asking, what are your plans after you fly over here to Europe to attend the conference in Brussels on the 10th of October? When are you going back to America? And how are you thinking about all of that? They're asking very smart questions, and I didn't have any answer at all. And I was really interested to know, how are you playing that? Have you bought your ticket yet? When are you planning on going back to America? What circumstances, what would the circumstances have to be that would make you change your mind and decide to stay in Europe or even go somewhere else in the world? And have you been thinking and talking about all of this? It's an important subject.
Yes, actually, we had a sort of a little impromptu meeting over the weekend with some friends in which we were talking about that very subject, simply because of the possibility of enforced vaccinations, for one thing, along with some other things that are going on. I have talked to George Green recently, and he sort of gave me a bottom line as to when to be sure and leave the U.S., so to speak. I mean, it's really a complex question because, as many people may know about my personality, I tend to want to be on the front lines, wherever that front line happens to be. At the moment, it seems to be in America because America seems to be target number one on the sights of the Illuminati, if you will, at least in terms of being taken down economically and for this rollout of what could be forced vaccinations. Although at the moment we're getting new information. Over the weekend we saw some information from Tom Bearden, which talked about how basically viruses can be spread using scalar weaponry. And with that in mind, it's you know, that even goes beyond chemtrails. It goes beyond the actual vaccine, which we already know will be contaminated, and then on top of it, the virus itself, which from talking to Bill Deagle and others, we know is quite possibly going to recombine and become sort of a super virus of some kind. Although, you know, the viruses mutate constantly is my understanding.
I have to ask you a question here. Hang on, because this is my role to ask the questions that I can feel right now all the listeners are asking. It's like, how do you spread a virus through a scalar weapon? It's like, wait a minute, didn't you mean weakening the immune system so that the viruses that are there can grab a hold? But here comes the music again, and I'm going to have to wait for a few minutes for the answer to that question, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Look around, choose your own ground.
After I've been away for the weekend, long weekend, a very long weekend, when I was in Poland and I was in Austria, visiting a whole bunch of wonderful people in Poland, setting up an interview with Igor Witkowski, the Nazi Bell researcher, which Kerry and I will have a great deal of fun doing next month, and reporting back on the meeting that I had today with Jane Burgermeister, and talking a lot about the imminent problems that we have about the swine flu. I've got a beautiful little interview with her that I want to release in the next few days, about 45 minutes long. And I had just asked Kerry what her plans were, inasmuch as she may or may not have any plans at all, about whether to return to America after she finds herself here in Europe in October. And Kerry, you were just saying how it's not really part of your personality to think about going into reverse or retreating or taking a back seat doing anything whatsoever. Would that be a fair summary?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I like to be, at least in terms of Camelot, on the front lines. It's part of the reason why we ended up getting together and creating Project Camelot, was because we, in a sense, had that sort of, I don't know, fearlessness, whatever you want to call it, that made doing what we do very possible, and something that we wouldn't shrink back from. So, So here in America, like I said, we are sort of on the front line. But what we were talking about before we went to break was this very good information from Tom Bearden's site, which was sent to me recently. And it has to do with spreading disease in populations. Actually, there's a statement on the website which talks about this and actually says we are in the middle of World War III. It's just that the people don't know it. And World War III involves the spread of using these weapons, scalar weapons, to basically spread disease. And it has to do with longitudinal electromagnetic, a type of a bioweapon. And yes, it involves weakening the immune system. But I think it's more than that. I think that in a sense it involves also the sort of the psyche and the mind, if you will, because and this sort of dovetails with David Wilcox's investigations and many healers as well and some of the Pete Peterson information as well, which has to do with what you allow to come into your body and why. And this also dovetails with some of, at least in my mind, because I like to make, I do a lot of free associating. And this has to do with tapping into the information field and why the Illuminati insist on publicizing basically what they're going to do before they do it. in a sense, there's a willingness or an openness that gets created in the sense that you will consider the possibility of something completely alien to you or to your body. And then in considering it, allow for an opening for that to actually take hold. And everything starts in the mind and in the information field first. If you will, the body is the final destination for anything, whether it's an idea or a virus or whatever. It has to start somewhere far, far beyond that, and usually in the unseen world.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Almost every alternative health practitioner, and to their credit, many allopathic health practitioners, will correctly identify the state of mind as being critical to the strength of the immune system. And this is why in an environment where we are all swimming around in bacteria and viruses all the time, some people get ill all the time, some people never get ill any of the time, and yet they're both exposed to the same stuff. And a lot of that difference lies in how one is thinking, and there's that wonderful Latin phrase "sana mens," "sana mens and sana corpore," a healthy mind and a healthy body. The two are inextricably linked. And if we're talking about remote influencing, which Pete Peterson did not want us to talk about, those of you who have enjoyed the very, very end of the part two of our video, if anyone is listening to this and haven't heard it, just fast forward to the very end of part two and just enjoy the closing few seconds there. I insisted that should be in there after Kerry had thought about shortening it, actually, but I have no idea whether it's going to get us into any trouble or not, and perhaps it's easy for me because if anyone likely to be Kerry. Go on.
It was just me. I was intuitively tapping into some information that Pete was beginning to allude to. That's all I'm going to say about that before I get myself in more trouble. But I want to get back to this to this very fascinating idea of how
we're talking about
wave can influence disease and the spread of disease. And I mean, the article is fascinating, and I think we should definitely put a link to it on our website so that people can see it. It's actually the title of the article is "How to Broadcast Diseases," and it's a Bearden article, but it's based on from what I understand, it is actually based on the work of French scientist Kerv Vran and a Russian scientist Kaznakachev. I don't know how you say it. Anyway, And basically saying that disease can be transmitted electromagnetically. And this doesn't seem like such a leap to me. It seems perfectly...
No, it's not the disease itself, or rather, it's not the causes of the disease or the agents of the disease. So it's not like bacteria and viruses are being transmitted electromagnetically, but it's that the conditions are being induced electromagnetically that allow the disease to manifest. That's what Bearden's talking about, I'm certain of it. And of course, I mean, that makes it just as powerful a weapon as if you were able to send viruses through the air. You're not sending viruses through the air. Viruses are opportunistic. All disease agents are opportunistic.
I think you need to read this article, because my interpretation, I mean, I can actually quote from the article, and that might be valuable. At one point they say, now visualize of one of these vacuum engines or space-time curvature engines that acts en masse to generate the exact effects produced by anthrax, for example. Call the virtual state of a disease engine the disease pattern in the shadow state just prior to becoming observable. And then it says, you know, master cellular control system responds to events that cast their shadows before they become reality. And it's the shadow state of disease in a virtual state there that they are actually dealing with. It's really fascinating.
Okay, yeah. I understand that now.
I think that we are talking about affecting...
It's actually not as I described. Now I understand that he's talking about something that's more fundamental than that. He's still not talking about teleporting viruses, but he's talking about creating these are my words, not his, of course, the resonance effects of the viral presence without the viruses actually having to be present physically, in the same way as with a radionics machine, you can create the vibration, so to speak, of a remedy at a distance. You can use that negatively to create the vibration of a poison or of a virus or absolutely anything whatsoever remotely, and nothing physically is traveling, but the resonance appears like the shadow that he's talking about. That's my anticipatory understanding of what he's talking about. But you know, we need to talk to Bearden.
This is absolutely very clear. I have to say that as good as our interview with Pete Peterson is, in my view, there's another interview to be had with Pete. this is a chance for me to talk about our Awake and Aware in LA conference, where Pete is going to be speaking. Actually, in just 2 weeks or less, it's going to be the weekend of the 18th, 19th, and 20th of September. And so for those of you out there that haven't already bought tickets, I really want to encourage you to do so. We have room for 800 people a day. That's for the all-day Saturday and all-day Sunday. And Pete will be around and about there, and actually probably a little before and after the conference as well. He loves to talk. He's, as you can see from the video, he's actually a fascinating speaker. He goes into a great deal of detail, which is what makes listening to him and to anyone really fascinating, because he's not a generalist. He gets down into specifics. And I think that we could talk a lot more to him about this information field. And understandably, some of this is highly classified. So people out there, I need to realize that is part of what's going on, and you have to read between the lines in watching that interview to really get to the root of some of the amazing knowledge this man has and some of the things that he is, in a sense, telegraphing that the secret government has been deeply involved in for a long time. And one can imagine, if you just extrapolate from there, if they've been involved in this area for quite some time, as have the Russians, as have, I'm sure, the Chinese, just to name a couple of governments, and not to mention whatever ET assistance they've had in these areas. You know, we're really talking about a rabbit hole that we haven't even been able to graze the surface of.
Yes, and we have heard similar things from Jake Simpson. We heard similar things from Henry Deacon, Arthur Neumann. And it seems that the technology does exist to control and access information using some form of, I don't even know what words to use, basically operating in hyperspace, not in real space. This doesn't work electromagnetically. This is how eavesdropping and surveillance is done. It's done in hyperspace. They don't need to put bugs in bedrooms or to fire lasers at windows to analyze the vibrations from the sound of the person talking. They can go straight into the person's mind and extract the information without the person even knowing. This is what we are led to believe. And if one can start to mess with the so-called information field, then you're starting to mess with anything. And it sounds like Bearden is talking about exactly the same realm, let me say. I think that we can probably be introduced to Tom Bearden by Brian O'Leary, and I will get on to Brian about this. We may not be able to meet him, but we should be able to connect with him on audio, and I would like to do a proper audio interview rather than invite him on the show where we're always getting interrupted and we can't control the audio quality. I'd like to do a proper audio interview with him.
Absolutely. Well, it would be wonderful to do both. And this is an area where we really do need to delve into a lot deeper. Now we can take callers, since, you know, it's just the two of us here. And, to finish the answer to your question, because of what's going on, it's kind of like you can run, but you cannot hide type of scenario on the planet at the moment. I think that one does have to sort of lay their bets and take their chances, if you will, with what's coming down the pike. And this is not just viruses being spread on purpose, but there are other matters, you know, at the fore. And we're getting sort of clued into a lot more things constantly. And it's really is interesting escalating curve, I think, you might call it, where we've gotten to
I asked you what your plans were about October.
I know, but this is a very roundabout way of answering it, because these things are under consideration, if you will. What I'm very concerned with, obviously, as being a member of Camelot, is that if there were going to be internment camps, it may be that that I might be public enemy number one or something, you know, on that order.
I think you're right up there at the top of the list, actually. Personally, might not be number one, might be number two or three. You know,
maybe I'm completely harmless in their view. I mean, you just don't know. The other thing is that with that in mind, yes, I am looking at going to Europe, probably staying away for a bit of time and observing the landscape, so to speak. We are getting information again. October seems to be one of these bell ringer months, which I cannot make sense of. But again, this year, just like last year, we're getting all kinds of indications that, you know, October, November, that scenario is going to be a rollout of quite a few things. It appears that we'll make it through September. So I do encourage everyone to come to our conference and not worry about that in particular in the U.S. But after that, we just don't know, and all bets could be off. A hint from Jake Simpson, from George Green, from...
Let me just put in my own plug about the conference here. The feeling which I have, and it really is a feeling, is that this is the kind of conference where anything could happen, anything could be revealed, any kind of a conversation could take place on stage between some very remarkable people here. There really is like a critical mass of a group of people who know an awful lot, and who between them know an awful lot of people who know an awful lot. And if you want to be where it's at, I think that this is an opportunity not to be missed.
Absolutely. And I have an announcement to make along those lines, I have to say, which you don't even know about. But I was contacted just a couple of days ago, and it appears that we might have a very, very special guest. And that's all I can say about that. And we're going to investigate that a little further and see just where that goes. But someone has offered to come forward who has some very vital information. So,
allowed to guess, or is this not
no,
for
you're
public?
Not allowed to, no, you're not allowed to guess because you.
I'm not allowed to guess. Okay.
You're one person who knows too much, and if you will, but other people can guess all they want.
Okay.
We cannot reveal that person, and quite possibly won't reveal the person until they walk on stage. We're going to have to negotiate that situation.
Okay.
But
after the break, we're going to take calls.
I have to say that.
512-879, stop interrupting. 512-879-3805. We're going to take
you're
calls
interrupting
after the break.
Me, and I want to finish because I want to tell everyone that Duncan O'Finian is going to be there.
Baby, slow down. The end is not as far as the stars. Please stay a child somewhere in your life.
Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio, and we're talking to each other in this particular show. And I must say, even if I say so myself, I think this is quite an interesting conversation we're having. I hope that other people who have got this far into the show agree with us. You just allowed yourself to be interrupted by the commercials there, serves you right. as a friend of mine always used to say, don't talk when I'm interrupting. But I was just trying to give the number just before I knew that we were going to get cut off for callers. Looks like I succeeded here because we've got a whole bunch of people, including one brave soul who has been waiting for an hour and 1 minute. And why don't you,
okay,
you start to take one or two calls. Let's finish off what... Yeah, don't.
I actually,
you're interrupting me again. Go
I know.
On.
I
know what I'm doing here. I know I'm going to bridge. Be quiet. I'm just quite well able to sense when you want to talk, and I'm very good at making bridges over into what you're going to say. Okay, so. You don't trust someone to give you space. That's the problem. It's because when you're a little girl, you always had to fight for attention with your sisters.
Will you stop
and,
already?
But you don't have to do that with me because I didn't have any brothers and sisters, right? So that's why I don't fight with people for attention because I've got nobody to fight with when I was a kid. I just let people talk and I knew that I was going to get my say. So I'm really interested in what you were saying about a guest on our show, not on our show. I'm sorry, I'm not thinking straight. A guest on the Camelot conference, and this is what you wanted to say right there at the very end, was that there's somebody who may be making an appearance, and you gave me a hint here during the break when we were off air, and I do understand that it's important not to be a tease about this, because people actually get very frustrated when they're being teased. But there are some things that we can't guarantee unless until they are confirmed. But I do strongly, on the basis of what I've learned here, encourage people to make that decision and come along to the conference because it could be really quite special. That's it, Bridge. Off you go.
Okay, well, so what I wanted to tell people is that we are trying to advertise the conference, so we are looking for donations for money to advertise, I have to say, to get the word out across the United States, certainly, and around the world as well. For people that want to come to the conference, this is going to be a great opportunity to meet some of these people face-to-face, to have informal talks with them, and to spend some quality time with them. We're going to do a lot of behind-the-scenes interviewing and future talks and this kind of thing. And there are going to be some other special guests that I am not revealing either that let me just call them special guests, okay? But I can guarantee you those people will be there. They've already bought their tickets, or we've paid for them. And so again, there are going to be people in the crowd that are going to be fascinating. And then there's the other side of the coin, in which one of our whistleblowers who I was chatting with said, there could be so many people from intel agencies that there will be no room for anyone else. But I have to say that if there is going to be, they're going to stand at the door and buy their ticket probably, or they're going to buy a last-minute ticket in the next 2 weeks. So get in there and get your ticket now. That's the end of my plug for that. But
what
I also want to say that I am not.
What we should do is we should have a special deal for members of the FBI, the CIA, the NRO, and the CIA. If they produce their identification, then we'll give them a special discount, right?
Absolutely. And I know, actually, we're going to charge them twice as much. But no, just kidding. However, any defectors are welcome from those agencies. So if you want to approach us during the conference, we're going to be around and about. We're always interested in talking to you guys and women. And so there's an open invitation right there. And you will recognize, I guess, some of your friends among our witnesses, I have to say. So you guys can get together and compare notes, and we can maybe get you on camera at the same time. The other thing is that it would be wonderful, for example, and I'm just throwing this out for the listeners, and who knows who's listening, but for example, it would be wonderful to do something like wild, like fly Boriska over from Russia for the weekend, because he is such a special guy, and he's growing up, but for him to be among this group would really be very, very special for him and for them. And so I'm just throwing that out. If money was to appear suddenly to make that possible, and we were able to get through on the phone to Russia, which I have to say has been a very difficult task for many months now. It's quite difficult for us to find and get in touch with Boriska again. However, we actually have money waiting in an account to give to him, that was a small amount of donations that came in quite a while back, since we've lost touch. So I'm just throwing that out, that it would be wonderful to have Boriska here and again bring your attention to our video interview with Boriska on our website. He's a very, very special soul, and I just wanted to talk about him briefly there. So,
interesting question which I have there. I don't know whether we can easily find out the answer to that, but with 2 weeks' notice, it might not be possible for a Russian teenager to get a visa to visit America. I think these things need special permissions, or they certainly used to. But it's just an open question, and maybe we can find out how easy that could be.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, the powers that be can do anything they want. And Boriska is heavily surveilled. As you can imagine, he's going to one of their special schools and so on. So anything that they wanted to make possible, they could make possible. And there may be some white hats over in Russia that would like to see that happen as well. So I'm just throwing that out. We have also given free entrance to any whistleblower or any Camelot witness that we have interviewed or had dealings with. So I'm stating that here on the air, but I actually sent an email to everyone letting them know that. There's a very good chance, I spoke to Bill Deagle, that he's going to be there as well. It's just becoming a who's who of Camelot witnesses, certainly, but even of the most important people in this whole sector, I think, are going to be showing up. It's really amazing.
I think that's, yeah, the feeling I have is that this is going to be quite a special weekend. Let's just summarize it like that. Let's take some calls. We've got a whole bunch of people here who want to talk to us. The patient hero here is somebody who's been waiting for an hour and 8 minutes. And do you want to take that call? This is the one at the top of the list here.
Oh, go right ahead. Why don't you go ahead?
Do that? Okay, I'll do that right this minute. And whoever you are, we salute you for your patience. Area code 317, you've been waiting for us for quite a long time. Can you hear us?
I sure can. Hello, Bill. Hello, Kerry.
Well, thanks for being so patient and hanging on in there. It's good of you to be waiting for so long. And do you have a question, or is there something you'd like to share with us? Who are we speaking to?
I have a couple of questions about the gadgets that Pete Peterson was talking about. He had mentioned the finger / acupressure gadget that he was talking about. I was wondering if you had any specific information, maybe on the name that he had given it or anything, so that some of your listeners and readers could try to find maybe a local alternative health practitioner that might actually have one of these that we could go and try out for ourselves.
This is a very good question, and I'm sure that you're not alone in asking it. I got back, as you may possibly have heard, from Poland and Austria just minutes before I came on the air here, and I turned on my computer, which started to download 1,200 emails. And somewhere in there, we might even have heard from Pete himself. What we need to do is we need to pass on all these questions to him so that they can be answered properly. And I think we need to set up a special page full of information about this, which he can definitively on which he can definitively make statements and maybe answer questions that we can pass on to him. I wouldn't like to take the risk of answering some of these questions on his behalf, because I don't personally understand the technology well enough.
I can tell you that our site was basically taken down. We had so many people over the weekend trying to see the Pete Peterson videos when I released them, and that was a feat in and of itself, I have to say. Just because there is 4 hours of testimony there, and when you're uploading videos of that size to YouTube, and I have a special director account that allows me to do that, you can't imagine the length of time and so on, and the difficulties that you can run into. And also, we had some glitches. I had to re-upload some things. There was no diabolical conspiracy going on behind the scenes, other than the fact that I had to re-edit, because we have a funny thing that goes on with Camelot videos, in which they do get hit by some kind of weaponry that takes the video and separates it from the audio in very odd ways. And so I have to be very vigilant as an editor, and we, both of us, Bill and I, have to go over and over our material to make sure that hasn't happened. And sometimes it gets it escapes us until the last minute, and then we have to re-export on Final Cut and re-upload. And I know it's very technical for me to go into that, but that is some of what goes on behind the scenes. But to answer your question, caller, we also have agreed to possibly create sort of like a mailbox and a place, a page, as Bill's saying, but also to sell some of Pete's devices. And we're going to try to arrange that with him. It hasn't happened yet, but we got so many orders already, which Bill doesn't even know about, that obviously it's going to need to have to happen, provided that we can arrange all that with Pete.
There was another device I was curious about, if I could, and Bill had mentioned it. It's the end of part two of the video. I think it was a device that attaches to the front of your forehead and the back of your head. Do you know anything more about what a layperson could practically do with some device like that? Could we use it for self-healing or anything of a good nature, rather than what you were alluding to in the video?
Yes, you can, actually, but I don't know that we're going to have access to that. It's quite sophisticated. Although we were talking to a doctor offline here, or at least I was, who shall remain nameless, who does have access to some kind of device which sounded similar. Is that correct, Bill? Would that be in your interpretation?
The only honest answer I can give is I don't know at this point. I just don't know.
Yeah, there are levels to some of Pete's devices that are obviously top secret. So what the things that would be out in the public sector, I don't know what exactly he's going to make available. It's just not clear to us.
If I could just ask one final. Oh, I'm sorry. If I could ask one final quick thing is, I was just wondering if Bill could point out what some of the more important parts we should look to in the video. I know he had said several times this is one of the most important videos you've done, and I was wondering what new information specifically we should look for in it.
Well, let me answer that obliquely and to say actually that the most fun was probably in Kerry's part, which was the final... the final hour, or the final near hour, where Kerry, being Kerry, came in with a whole bunch of very provocative questions, which Pete stonewalled by saying, no comment, or I can't answer that, or I told you that I wouldn't be able to talk about that, or something like that. And you could actually extrapolate quite a lot of information from the tones of Pete's no comments in response to Kerry's particular questions. So Pete has done his duty by saying that he can't answer that or he doesn't know anything about that, and then you can read between the lines by figuring out the relationship between the questions and the answers, and I think that's the most fun. Here comes the music.
Okay, thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you for your call. We'll be back in a couple of moments. We'll see how many calls we can get to, and we're into the final 8 minutes of the show. Kerry, you can pick up the calls when we get back. Project Camelot, and we have been catching up with each other after quite an interesting long weekend. And we haven't had a guest on this program, but I think it's been quite an interesting show. We're going straight into some callers in the final 7 minutes that we have here, and I'm going to take another very patient person who's been waiting for 53 minutes. You're on the air. This is area code 785. Can you hear us?
Yeah, this is Travis Brown.
Well, hi.
I just wanted to ask a couple of questions. I know you guys haven't interviewed anybody like Jaime Masson or Dr. Jonathan Reed. I was wanting to know if you had any plans on talking to them on an interview.
Let me answer that one, if I may, and... we've got one or two calls we'd like to see if we can get through. We know Jaime Masson. We have a high degree of respect for him. He's a good researcher. He does an enormous amount of work. And as many people in the U.S. know, there's a huge hotbed of activity in Mexico and all of Latin America, which doesn't always make it into the awareness of non-Spanish-speaking people. And so... our position with Jaime is that we know him, we like him, we'd like to talk to him, and we'd certainly like to go to Mexico to talk to him in person to find out what's going on. With the Jonathan Reed story, my personal opinion is that I am not convinced that this is for real. I just want to leave it like that. I don't want to slander the guy if he is for real, because that would be an injustice, and we're not into injustice. But based on what I have been able to look into, which isn't everything, I'm not completely convinced about this story. That's the most intellectually honest I can be about that, and I hope that that's an adequate answer. I'm going to move on to the next call, which is going to be taken by Kerry. Kerry, I took that call just because I wanted to get on with the show in the last few minutes and maximize the number of people. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm not sure which call we're on. Is it I'm just going to take one of the calls here then. So we're on Asterisk Restricted. This was it doesn't have an area code. You're on the air with Project Camelot. Are you there? Hello? Do you have a number? Are you calling from Skype, or you maybe your area code is hidden? Caller?
If somebody has been waiting for 23 minutes, that's the only way we can identify you. Or you can try talking and see if you can...
Oh, hello. My name is William. Can you hear me?
Hi, William.
Hello? Hi. Sorry about that. I wasn't sure because normally my number comes up as 416. It's William from Toronto. We've been talking a few times.
Okay.
I wanted to commend you on a really great job with the Peterson interview. It was very informative, and I can't say anything more than great job, and thanks to Kerry for being Kerry, as Bill duly notes on more than one occasion. I guess I'll make it quick because I know that there are other people waiting, but I did want to say, in your own travels and in regards to the bug out bag, let's just say, as Pete had referred to it as, what would be in everything that you've heard him say on and off camera, if you're at liberty to say, and also from your own experience as travelers, and I'm a traveler as well, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of the listeners are travelers, and some, I don't know if you've experienced this, but every time I go through customs, I always wonder, like, what they are looking at on that screen, and I don't know if you've experienced this yourself, but you get a little antsy every time somebody looks at your passport, especially with the people that you've been dealing with. I ever wonder if, you know, you guys have been flagged, or anything else that we should just generally keep in mind when we're traveling, kind of what to have on us at any given time, and maybe what some of the content of the notorious bug out bag might have, or any websites that we can go on to check out, any, you know, realistic ideas that we could, what to stock in them. And I guess that would be...
Okay,
that would be
well, that's a very good question. I'll start off with that, because I think that you shouldn't be without... I would say two things, but mainly one, which is MMS. And what that is Jim Humble. We did an interview with Jim Humble. He's got a product called MMS, which is Miracle Mineral Supplement. And I have to say...
Can I order that through him?
Actually, he has a website. I believe it's called MiracleMineralSupplement.com.
It's also JimHumble.com.
Yeah, and you can purchase that for 20. It's very cheap. It's like $20 or something, a bottle, and it lasts forever. It goes very far because you just use a drop at a time, or just a few drops, up to, say, 15. It's very, very potent. But in essence, if you get into a bind, if someone tries to inoculate you with something, or you get, you think you're coming down with something, if you just take a few drops of that, it will clean it out of your system. And we've actually got testimonies, personal testimonies from other people, but we also came back with the virus, which I am now thinking was a form of this H1N1, sort of a combined virus that involved maybe even bird flu when we came back from Russia. I think it's been...
Were you inoculated?
No. A year and a half ago or 2 years, in which we just came back from Russia after interviewing Bariska, and we both came down instantly with some kind of amazing virus that we couldn't get rid of. And we were both very sick for 2 weeks, and we were really at the end of our rope wondering what to do in terms of, you know, just being weak and having all those flu-like, cold-like symptoms, and someone recommended MMS, and that's actually how we found out about it. We tried it. We sent away for a bottle, got one very quickly, and took a few drops, and we're better in 2 days. So it does work. So that's one thing that I think is indispensable. And it looks like the music's coming up. We're at the end of the 2-hour show. And maybe you want to send us an email.
Well, thank you very much for that, Kerry.
To elaborate on what else you could put in that bag.
That's a good
idea.
Okay,
I'll do that.
Actually, we'll put a feature on our site about that. That would be good. A good service that maybe we might be able to provide. This is it. This is the end of our show. Thank you to everyone who called
and listened.
Let me say,
we're going to have on Thursday, we're having George Green doing an update, so don't miss that. And we're also going to have David Wilcock, if all things go as planned. So that's Thursday with Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And we are told to let you know that Jack Blood is following our show. So if you want to listen, we encourage you to do so.
How would you like to cook?